You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Zimbabwe went through a long period of political and economic turmoil and might be at the brink of a new era. There's a new constitution been approved and upcoming elections are going to be held in June this year. So in this context, what are the challenges with regard to development in Zimbabwe?
Indeed, Zimbabwe is at crossroads at the moment. As you are probably aware, there is a new constitution, which was a condition that had been agreed by all the parties in the government of national unity to come up with a new constitution, because the old constitution that we had was a transitional constitution that was agreed in 1979, when we were moving from a colonial period into independence. So it was a compromise document which has been reviewed, amended 19 times already. So it was agreed and seen fit that instead of keeping on amending this, there was need for a much more comprehensive constitution that basically borrowed from good practices from elsewhere. So basically that was the agreement. The key challenges now are that the constitution making process was a forerunner, a precursor to the holding of elections. It was agreed that one of the conditions was that come up with a new constitution on the basis of which the elections will be held. But however, that was not the only agreed position that has not yet been implemented. It was also agreed that there was supposed to be a land commission, which was supposed to bring to a closure the land issue. Because as you know right now, one of the major challenges is that whilst the seizure of land and the redistribution of land has been done, the people that are sitting on the land do not have title deeds. So in essence, it's a dead asset. It's not a productive asset. You cannot use it to borrow money. So as a result, that has constrained the recovery of agriculture. So it was agreed and seen fit that there should be a land commission, which will basically bring to closure the issue of the land and also deal with the anomalies that came about during the process of redistribution, such as multiple ownership of the land, the optimal sizes of the land, all those issues. It was agreed, therefore, that a technical process called the Land Commission should deal with that. That was not done because, obviously, the people that benefited from multiple ownership, from all these anomalies that I've mentioned, are still there, and they wouldn't want to lose what they've already obtained. So there hasn't been any movement on that. Then secondly, a critical issue before elections is that it was agreed that there should be governance reforms, focusing on media reforms, because at the moment the state media is controlled by ZANU-PF, one of the parties, which was in government all along. So as such, the other parties do not have access to the media, equal access to the media. So it was agreed, therefore, that there should be media reforms, which basically open up the airwaves so that all the parties have got equal opportunities. But that has not been done for obvious reasons. Then there is another aspect. I've already mentioned that there's a new constitution, but there are various laws that have been brought up, such as the Public Order and Security Act, which basically criminalizes a lot of things. If you are seen gathering, if you say anything that is deemed by the state to be anti-state, you can be arrested. So these laws have to be brought in line with the new constitution, because the new constitution has got a comprehensive Bill of Rights, which outlines the rights, the freedom of association, the freedoms of individuals and institutions. So this has not actually been done as well. That's one of the major challenges. Then thirdly, there was an agreement to the fact that there should be security sector reforms. Because you may recall that in 2008, during those elections, the security played a critical role in rejecting the results of the election. And also the security sector became very, very active in politics, which disadvantaged the opposition parties and basically propped up the then ruling party, ZANU-PF. So it was also agreed that the security sector must be reformed in order to create an independent professional force that does not meddle in politics. So that has not been done for obvious reasons. So one of the major challenges that we face is that we are living too close to our history. So there are a lot of people who benefited, a lot of people who were part and parcel of the violence process and so forth, that are afraid of transitional justice issues. So as a result, they become an impediment to the reform process. So there are people that really fear that if there's change, for example, there could be retribution. They could lose the assets that they've acquired illegally. They could be taken to the Hague, the International Court for Justice. It's happening in Kenya. It's happened in Liberia. So as I indicated, we are living so close to our history that they are afraid that if there is a change, that could actually imply transitional justice issues will actually be brought up. So that's another challenge on the political side. So the issue of reforming the electoral process as well to ensure that there is a free and fair election. In the past, ZANU-PF controlled the electoral processes. They basically put their own people into positions, strategic positions. They militarized the processes. Such that right now, they have got an unfair advantage. So it was also designed that these reforms, especially to the electoral process, should ensure that there's a free and fair election and that there's transfer of power should the former ruling party lose. So those are issues that are still very outstanding. On the economic side, the major challenge basically is with re-engaging international partners. Because international partners have been supporting government, but off budget. They've been supporting the budget. Their resources haven't gone through the budget. As such, it's a major challenge because government doesn't have much fiscal space. At the moment, 70% of whatever government raises is going towards employment costs. So there's very little resource for provision of public services. There's very little resources remaining for infrastructure development, for social protection, for social development in essence. So as such, that's one of the major economic challenges that we are facing, that there's limited fiscal space, which is actually shrinking. And hence, for instance, when we did the referendum in March on the new constitution, the government had to borrow money from the private sector. They had to raise treasury bills to the tune of 40 million from the private sector in order to fund the elections. So the government coffers are empty at the moment. They don't have the resources. And the challenge now is that the UNDP has been approached to assist. But when they insisted on certain preconditions, it was seen as interference. So government, basically the ZANU-PF elements in government said, no, we don't brook any interference by international organizations. So again, it's the fear of transitional justice issues that is playing up. So those are some of the challenges. The last one that I need to mention in terms of economic challenges is with respect to the debt distress. The government is in debt distress. We've got a debt overhang of $10.7 billion, $70 US, 70% of which are in arrears. So before the international community re-engages, the precondition is that we should enter into a relationship with the IMF. We should go through a shadow, a staff monitored program, where we have to have a track record of implementation of sound policies imposed by the international finance institutions. It's another area of contestations, especially with the ZANU-PF element, who are insisting that they don't actually brook any interference from outside. So those are the major challenges, if I could say.
What role does the new constitution play in responding to some of those challenges? Although, as I understand from what you said, there is the constitution on the one hand, and then there's these other reforms which haven't happened, which are in conflict with each other.
Yeah. The first role that the new constitution is playing, as I indicated, it is an agreement. It is part of the global agreement that was reached by the three parties that are in government, that there should be a new constitution. It therefore sets the benchmarks in terms of the new laws of the country. And hence, all the other laws must be revised so that they are in line with the comprehensive framework that is provided by the new constitution. Because the new constitution provides for comprehensive individual and collective rights of Zimbabweans, whether it's children's rights, women's rights, the rights of the citizenry, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, all those things are actually contained in a comprehensive Bill of Rights. So as such, it provides us with a new impetus, as it were, a new framework, progressive framework, that is aligned with the best practices internationally. That's why during the constitution-making process, UNDP had to second an international lawyer who had to actually to bring in the international best practices so that we have got a modern instrument of governance. So I think the new constitution does play a very critical role because it brings in a new instruments for governance. And basically, based on this new framework, every other law now must be reformed. And hence the issues that I mentioned earlier on, the areas like media, governance, electoral laws, that have now to conform with this new framework.
Thank you very much. Now, one thing that marked the elections last time round in 2008 was some significant violence that occurred around the elections. Is that still a risk for these elections this time? Is that still a risk for the elections processes this time?
Yes, indeed. Violence, as you know, emanates from fear of losing power, especially with respect to the former ruling party and the associated transitional justice issues that they are afraid of. So as such, because of that fear, when they see that a level playing field will sort of give an advantage to the opposition, they basically want to retain the upper ground by using violent means, like what happened in the past, not only in 2008, even all the elections that we've had since 2000 have been accompanied by violence. So basically, yes, there is that likelihood that violence will raise its ugly head again. But I don't think that it will be at the same level as what we saw in 2008 because of the role that SADC and South Africa have to play and the African Union have to play as the guarantors of the electoral process. So as we speak now, the South African mediators are in Zimbabwe trying to ensure, to enforce the global political agreement, especially with respect to those outstanding reforms that I've already alluded to. So the role of South Africa and SADC as guarantors of this shaky framework and the transition towards a new dispensation is going to be very critical also in minimizing, not entirely eliminating, because the fears that are still residual will ensure that those that are afraid will actually use all the means that is available to foster, you know, violence. The other aspect that is very interesting to note in terms of one likely source of violence is the inter-party rivalry. As you know, for example, ZANU-PF is riddled in factions, and the factions are so violent now. And as such, I mean, one can actually foresee, we've already been seeing it, people are being targeted within the same party, basically, because they belong to different factions. So these are real issues also that can actually bring about inter-party and intra-party violence.
Great. Thank you very much. I have two more questions. One is about the relationship between politicians in Zimbabwe and the external development community in Zimbabwe. How is the relationship between those evolving in, as a result of the new constitution and the reforms which we hope will now take place?
Yeah, if I may rephrase your question, that depends on which political party. Because the international community generally is more accessible, is more friendly to the movement of democratic change parties. So generally they are sort of favorable. And basically because of the history, that ZANU-PF is the one that was in government when the relationships deteriorated and when the international community pulled out and they later on imposed targeted sanctions on the individuals and certain organizations are associated with the ruling party. So basically, the relationship between ZANU and the international community is very suspicious, if you want, because the international community, don't forget, also is demanding reforms, and ZANU-PF is not amenable to that demand. And hence, the relationship tends to be riddled in tensions, in conflict, in suspicions, in some form of animosity as well, even with respect to the arrears clearance. It's a big issue with international finance institutions that are demanding that the arrears be cleared, arrears on debt be cleared, and yet we don't have the fiscal space. They are demanding, for example, that there be transparency in terms of sources of revenues, such as diamonds, because there's no transparency with respect to diamond revenues. Before the inclusive government came into being, the former ruling party ZANU-PF had basically captured the key sources of mineral revenues, and in particular diamonds. And right now, the pressure coming from the opposition and also the international community is to open up that whole sector to enhance transparency and also ensure that proper governance structures are implemented in the diamond sector so that the revenues go into the treasury rather than go into the individual pockets. So basically that's how the relationship is couched. It's couched by the former relationships.
Great, thank you. And I think my last question, you've started to answer it, but maybe you can elaborate on it a little bit. The question is, how might these new political developments impact on extractive industries, or maybe governance of extractive industries in Zimbabwe, or the possibility of getting revenues actually into government coffers rather than into individual pockets?
Well, that's a very good question. The issue basically is that by opening up and democratizing that space, it would therefore imply that every source of revenue is brought within the realm of treasury. The government has got control instead of individuals. Because Zimbabwe is a classic example of state capture, where individuals, political elites with security connections, have captured certain revenue-raising sources like diamond revenues for their own private benefit. In other words, the predatory instincts of these individuals is such that they are basically privatizing what is a national resource. And basically the pressure that is being brought to bear right now is to ensure that this state of affairs is corrected and that the revenues correctly go into the treasury and into the budgetary process rather than go into the pockets of individuals. So that's one of the implications, basically, of reforming that sector and also ensuring that the marketing of diamonds is done through formal Kimberley-certified processes, because a lot of side marketing is taking place at the moment. Thank you.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.